There was a recent article in Science looking at a troubling trend of land subsidence in Chinese and Taiwanese cities. Subsidence is a fancy term describing when the Earth's surface starts moving vertically downwards over time. In other words, sinking. These lands are sinking. This might seem like a recent occurrence, but its causes are long-running, and at the heart of it, pretty simple. China is using too much groundwater. In this video, we look at China's land subsidence problem. Land subsidence is a natural phenomenon, but one caused by human activities. Most often is it caused by the withdrawal of fluids, oil for energy, hot water for geothermal, or groundwater for drinking, from massive aquifers underneath the ground. The soil bears the weight from buildings, cars, cats, yourself, whatever. When the aquifer has lots of water, the grains of that soil are surrounded by water, and that water helps support the unbearable weight burden of your butt. But when we pull water out of the aquifers, it leaves more effective stress on the soil grains. The soil grains compress together and get denser, causing the land to sink, land subsidence. Inject more water and the opposite happens, uplift, but only to a certain extent. Uplift by aquifer replenishment can recover some of the sink, but the majority of land subsidence is irreversible due to soil and clay compression plus permanently shrinking water storage. Modeling soil behavior, especially as aquifers deplete, is complicated. There are a few reasons for this. First, we cannot easily model the size, shape, and capacities of the aquifers themselves and their geologies. As you might expect, these tend to be extremely complicated. Clays, for example, have smaller grains, so subsidence factors affect them differently than with normal soils. Subsidence behaviors are also very dependent on outside factors. For instance, if we build a really heavy building, like what they did in San Francisco, its weight can cause the land to sink. Second, data on how much groundwater is actually being injected into or taken out of the system is very unreliable. Sometimes the water is being taken out surreptitiously. And finally, we lack a clear understanding of the land subsidence or uplift process. A few models exist, the most popular of which is the U.S. Geological Survey's ModFlow, but their accuracies vary. All of this to say that we have very little idea of what is going on, and that we should not expect the amount of land subsidence or uplift that we get in an area to be proportional to how much water we take out or inject into the aquifers. So why should we care about the land sinking? The actual impact and risks depend on that land's physical environment. Most obviously, everyone thinks about big sinkholes or massive earth fissures in the ground. The notion of a hole opening up beneath me while I sleep is a particular recurring nightmare of mine, and it does destabilize homes. But generally, the hazard is to infrastructure, like pipelines, roads, railway tracks, and subways. Subsidence can cause groundwater leakages into underground tunnels and even break the tracks themselves. And it is a particular risk for high-speed rail trains, because these trains' tracks' maximum rated vertical differential is 15 millimeters. In some areas, that's just 1 year of subsidence progress. There's also a water quality problem with two significant factors. First, as an aquifer exhausts itself, the quality of the water coming out of it gets worse and worse. And second, industrial wastes, floods, and seawater intrude into the aquifers and contaminate them. And yeah, about the floods, many sinking cities border either a river or the ocean. When the land sinks, the city becomes more vulnerable to flooding and has to either invest in expensive sea defenses like walls or bear the consequences. Subsidence is a global issue and affects several megacities. Take Mexico City. Being built on a lake bed, the city is very reliant on groundwater and thus sinks at a rapid rate. Some parts of the city are falling at 500 millimeters each year, causing expensive damages to the city's underground metro system. At least Mexico City is inland. Jakarta is one of the fastest sinking cities in the world. Its northern and western areas are sinking at rates as high as 200 to 600 millimeters annually. This exposes the megacity to frequent floods from either the Java Sea or one of the 13 rivers flowing through it. It is so bad that they are supposedly moving the capital elsewhere. Land subsidence due to groundwater overexploitation has been recorded all over the world. Iran has it particularly bad, but so does Bangkok, Venice, Italy, and of course, the megacities of China. China's biggest cities suffer land subsidence because of rapid groundwater consumption. Today, there are nearly a billion Chinese people living in urban areas. Many of these areas do not have sufficient surface water, nor do they have reliable amounts of rain or snow, particularly in the north and northwest regions. So they have to extract groundwater. Across China, 15 to 20% of water demand is satisfied using groundwater, though that varies by area. For example, the northern province of Hebei, home to 75 million people, groundwater reliance there is up to 70%. Much of this water is not for drinking or cleaning up after waste. Rather, the majority, over 60%, is used for industry or agriculture. For instance, one of China's biggest water users is the coal power industry, which uses it for cooling. And interestingly enough, a great deal of groundwater is being pulled out just to be transferred to a richer province. Water from Xinjiang, Inner Mongolia, Henan, and Heilongjiang are being consumed over in richer provinces like Beijing, Guangdong, or Zhejiang. We'll talk about this more a little later. Going back to the paper I mentioned at the start, the authors measured land subsidence from 2015 to 2022 using a satellite-based technique called Interferometric Synthetic Aperture Radar, or INSAR. This is where we use radar images from space to measure how deep the land has sunk, comparing that over time. It works quite well and has been used in Europe, Japan, and America to measure land subsidence trends. A review of 82 major cities in China and Taiwan from 2015 to 2022 found that 44% of the surveyed pixel areas in those cities' lands sank faster than 3 millimeters a year, 16% of the pixels faster than 10 millimeters, and 5% of the pixels faster than 22 millimeters a year. They did a nice visual ranking of various industrially important cities in China and Taiwan. In Taiwan, the agricultural Changhua City, population 225,000, is called out for doing particularly badly. Over 50% of its population are living on land sinking at 10 millimeters a year. Taipei, for what it's worth, is doing quite well, with over 75% of its pixel areas subsiding at less than 3 millimeters a year. So that's Taiwan. Let's take a look at mainland China. Shanghai has been a megacity for a long time. For that reason, groundwater pumping there has gone on for the longest time, giving us the clearest picture of the land subsidence issue over the last several decades. Land subsidence in Shanghai was first discovered in 1921. Shanghai sits on at least five major aquifers, labeled A1 to A5. Before the 1960s, the majority of pumping came out of the A2 and A3 aquifers under the urban areas. By then, the land had sunk about 1.6 meters on average across the whole city. It was a disaster in the making. The Shanghai government noticed and in 1966 began instituting new methods of water conservation. This includes cutting down on groundwater pumping and adding more water down into the aquifers called artificial recharge. This helped, and there was even a little uplift over the next few decades. But in the 1990s, Shanghai's population began exploding upwards at a very high rate, about 5% annually. From 1990 to 2000, the population went from a mere 5.9 million to 14.2 million. The city started pumping the groundwater again. Between that and all the new construction and bigger buildings, the land subsidence started accelerating again. By 2001, the cumulative sink in Shanghai nearly reached 2 meters and spread it out throughout much of the city. Like I said, this land subsidence has real-world consequences beyond just the bad optics of fissures and sinkholes. A long-term study of Shanghai's metro tunnels found that land subsidence caused 2 of the 12 lines to need repairs. Incidents like these brought the Shanghai city government's attention back to the topic, and they stopped pumping their own aquifers, stabilizing the land subsidence in recent years. But as it turns out, this was done in part by pumping up other people's groundwater and importing it. Taking that into account, Shanghai is still one of southern China's biggest consumers of groundwater. Beijing and its neighbor Tianjin are located on the North China Plain. Both cities and their surrounding areas are heavily populated. Beijing has an official population of 21 million and Tianjin 14 million. The cities are also water scarce, receiving less than 100 cubic meters of precipitation per capita. Per the recent study in Beijing, 47% of the population live on land sinking at 3 millimeters a year, 30% at 10 millimeters a year. And in Tianjin, 90% of the population live on ground, sinking at 3 millimeters a year, and 66% at about 10 millimeters a year. The two cities contribute a staggering 38% of China's total population at risk from land subsidence. Land subsidence in Beijing was first measured in 1935, but in the 20 years since then, the subsidence advanced by only about 58 millimeters, so not that much. That changed in the late 1950s and 1960s as the city industrialized. More groundwater was pumped, accelerating the subsidence. From 1955 to 1983, land in Beijing's eastern suburbs sank at about 16 to 28 millimeters a year, which is a lot if you think about it. New water conservation measures were implemented in the late 1990s, but just about then, in the 2000s, Beijing began experiencing extended periods of water shortages due to drought and the ever-rising amounts of demand for water. Beijing's experience reflects that of other cities on the water-thirsty North China Plain. You might have never heard of these cities, but they are not small. Baoding has 11 million people, Hengshui 4.2 million people, Langfan 5 million people, and Shijiazhuang 11.2 million people. What? So, this North Basin gets more land fissures than anywhere else in China and Taiwan. In 2013, 839 groundwater-related fissures were identified in this large area. Fissures have been recorded elsewhere, and I want to call out two such basins in particular, the Fenway and the Shuixi-Chang. The Fenway Basin, or plain, is a particular concern point. It stretches across the Shaanxi and Henan provinces and hosts the cities of Xi'an, 12 million people, Weinan, 5 million people, Luoyang, 6 million people, and more. The area is already known for being seismically active, having experienced several devastating earthquakes in history. Such seismic activities are the second leading cause of further land subsidence. From 1958 to 2015, there were 207 identified fissures, stretching longer than 1 kilometer. They crack buildings, cut up metro tunnels, and damage underground pipes. And as I mentioned, earth fissures are particularly dangerous to high-speed rail. One high-speed rail track between Datong and Shaanxi and Xi'an crossed 24 earth fissures. One such fissure was measured at 2.5 meters wide. The Shuixi-Chang Basin in Jiangsu Province is another major fissure area, and it is a major oil-producing region in the country. Since 1989, there were 20 such large fissures identified. Since 2000, the government there has tried to cut groundwater usage, and that has reduced the subsidence rate from 110 millimeters a year to just about 10 to 20 millimeters a year. The core cause of the land subsidence issue is groundwater extraction. So long as groundwater is still being taken out of the ground, the land will keep on permanently subsiding. So China is building the massive south-to-north water transfer project. It is a multi-billion dollar project to channel water from the mighty Yangtze River to Beijing and Tianjin using 2 canals. A 3rd canal would bring water to the inland provinces. So far, that part is not yet done. It is the biggest and most expensive water project ever attempted in human history. It's an engineering wonder, but it also costs somewhere north of $40 billion, who really knows of such things, and forced the relocation of 300,000 people. In addition to this massive project, the Chinese government has recently announced many dozens of smaller and more integrated water infrastructure projects across China, the final intent being an integrated national water grid. Chinese spending on water infrastructure rose 7 times from 2008 to 2019 alone. In March 2024, Chinese Minister of Water Resources Li Guoying announced that the government spent $166 billion in 2023 just on water infrastructure, 10% more than in 2022. In 2023, the United States federal government spent an estimated $4 billion for water infrastructure, 10% of $45 billion of federal infra spending. Another $82 billion was transferred to the state governments for their own priorities, which may include water, and there's new legislation to do more water work. But overall, though, China is spending so much more on water. 40% of the spending for these Chinese water projects are for the South to North Water Transfer Mega Project, but 50% is for flood control or expanding water storage. Many of these projects also have dual purposes. For instance, China is also building a great deal of pumped storage hydro, where you turn a reservoir into a massive battery by pumping water into it when energy is plentiful. Anyway, the completion of the first phase of the South to North Water Transfer Project in 2014 has helped diversify Beijing's various water resources and blunted its prior dependence on groundwater. By 2018, almost 20% of the city's water usage came from water diverted from the south, though I note that that year, some 30% of the city's water supply still came out of the ground. But being the country's political center, Beijing's land subsidence and groundwater woes received a great deal of attention, and the government heavily lobbied for the megaproject. I do wonder how many such megaprojects are available to China's other water-stricken cities. All these water infrastructure projects are impressive. The United States has horridly underinvested in its own water infrastructure, leading to high-profile drinking water disasters. China is doing good to spend money on water. The issue, however, is how the government seems to believe that the capital S solution to its water shortage issues, and thus its sinking land problem, are big projects moving water from south to north. There is one thing that is not largely mentioned: strategies to reduce the water demand curve in these massive cities. One of the lessons I've pulled from prior water shortage experiences of countries like Singapore and Australia is that it is just as important to hit the demand side as well as supply. This might include policies to pass higher costs onto water consumers, water recycling projects, or maybe even cap-and-trade water markets. Curbing water demand by consumers, industry, and agriculture will yield more long-term benefits than just adding more concrete dams and canals, which have their own environmental problems. Without that, Chinese cities will keep sucking out more water out of the ground, and the lands will keep on sinking. Alright everyone, that's it for tonight, thanks for watching. Subscribe to the channel, sign up for the Patreon, and I'll see you guys next time.